Senate Subcommittee on Elections will come to order. A quorum is present, even though it doesn't look like it. Enough members have checked in now. Senator Carlson, we have Senate File 1638 in front of us.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you to all the members of the committee. I have Senate File 1638 for you to consider today. This is relating to campaign practices. The proposal makes changes to provisions under Chapter 211B, Fair Campaign Practices, which is under the jurisdiction of the Office of Administrative Hearings. Minnesota Statute 211B-045 creates a safe harbor for municipal regulations by allowing the posting of campaign signs of any size and number 46 days before a primary election until 10 days following an election. However, in contrast with Minnesota Outdoor Advertising Control Act, Minnesota Statutes 173.15, where consent is required, nothing in 211B prohibits signs from being posted on property without the owner's consent. In 1638, the following changes are being proposed: to add in that campaign signs cannot be placed on an occupant or an owner's property without first giving consent, and to clarifies that an administrative law judge must determine if the complaint could be a violation based on a prima facie determination, and requires the administrative law judge to make a determination regarding the merits of the complaint within 3 business days of the probable cause hearing. Members, I have Mrs. Tammy Poost, Chief Administrative Law Judge, here to cover the particulars of the steps and timing of the administrative hearings.
Judge Poost, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you. My name is Tammy Poost, P-U-S-T, and I'm the Chief Administrative Law Judge at the Office of Administrative Hearings. Thank you for allowing me to be here today. Senator Carlson has explained Section 1 of the bill, and I think that's very clear, but the Sections 2, 3, and 4 have to do with the timing of the process when it comes to the Office of Administrative Hearings for review. And that's a 3-step process. First, we do a prima facie determination. Then, in most cases, we do a probable cause determination. And then the third step is it gets assigned to a 3-judge panel. Right now, the statute is a little mixed up in terms of the time frames. And so Sections 2, 3, and 4 are just to clarify that in Section 2, we have 3 business days to do a prima facie determination. In Section 3, we have 3 business days after the hearing record closes to make a determination on our probable cause hearing. Determinations. And in Section 4, we have 10 days in which to hold the hearing after these 3-judge panels have been assigned. These are the processes that we've been using, but they're not really clear in the statute, and so we're just trying to change the statutory language to make clear to everyone exactly what steps we take and what
time. Thank you. Is there any question? Well, there's no one to ask if there are any questions. So is there anybody in the audience who would like to testify on Senate File 1638? Seeing none, Senator Carlson moves that Senate File 1638 be passed and recommended to the Committee on Rules and Administration. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. The bill is passed. Thank you.
Thank
very
you,
much,
Chair.
Senator Carlson and Judge Poost. Senator Eakin, Senate File 887.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Senate File 887 deals with candidate filing fees, and I think it's important to note that the filing fees haven't changed, at least in for 2 of the categories, since 1959, the other one 1967. So it's been a long time since these filing fees have been adjusted in any way. When a candidate for municipal office files an affidavit of candidacy, they pay a fee, just as we do when filing for legislative office. Cities with populations of less than 10,000 have a fee of $2, which was set in 1959. That would be $16 today. Cities with populations of 10,000 to 100,000 have a fee of $5, which was also set in 1959. That would be $40 today. Cities with more than 100,000 have a fee of $20, which was raised from $10 in 1967. That would actually be $142 today. It was $10 again in 1959 for inflation. That would bring that up to $81. This bill would allow statutory cities to set filing fees by ordinance, which is the same authority granted to charter cities. And if a city chooses not to change the fee, then it remains what it currently is in statute. So this is merely setting a cap in place. It's not establishing what the fees would be. This would allow cities to ensure that the fee covers the cost of processing the affidavit of candidacy and encourage serious and committed candidates by having a reasonable fee. If candidates are unable to pay the fee or choose not to, they can submit a petition of signatures, and they would need to collect whatever is less, 500 or 5% of the total number of votes, voters in the last general election. The amendment that we have creates caps for all four classes of statutory cities to acknowledge the concerns about filing fees being set too high. And so with that, we do have an amendment, and that would be the A1. Is that correct?
So the A1, members have the A1 amendment, and Senator Ekin moves this amendment to get the shape in the bill he would like. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
The motion prevails. Okay. The amendment is adopted.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. And this amendment basically sets those caps at just an inflationary adjustment, actually just a little bit less. I forgot there was going to be an amendment to the amendment. So we can amend the bill now. I guess I'll offer an oral amendment to the bill now, and this is on the amendment, the A1 amendment. We did change the numbers. Madam Chair and members, on line 1.12, we would change $150 to $80. And on line 1.13, change $100 to $40. And line 1.14, $50 would be changed to $15.
And Senator Ekin, it's my understanding that these changes reflect roughly what the inflationary increase would have been had those rates that were set back in the 50s been adjusted for inflation?
Exactly, Madam Chair. It's just an inflationary adjustment from 1959.
So Senator Ekin moves the oral amendment does anybody need reread? Senator Ekin moves the oral amendments on lines 1.12 to 1.14. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The oral amendment is adopted. So, Senator Ekin, now to the bill as amended, or did you want Ms. Lindstrom to provide testimony?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, Ms. Lindstrom is here to testify from the League of Cities.
Ms. Lindstrom, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee for hearing the bill, and thank you for Senator Ekin, your work on it, and for the amendment that's provided. I think that you covered all of the points. We're just looking for the ability for statutory cities to have fees that reflect the cost of living in these times and to encourage reasonable and committed candidates. So I'm here if there are any questions.
Just please state your name for the record.
Oh, I'm sorry. Ann Linson with the League of Minnesota Cities.
Thank you. And members will note that there is a letter in our packet from the city of Spring Lake Park in support of Senator Ekin's bill. Is there anybody else in the audience who wishes to testify on Senate File 887 as amended? Seeing none, then, I'm sorry, Senator Carlson.
Madam Chair and Senator Ekin, I have a question on it does not affect charter cities, is that correct? But it does allow the statutory cities to set by ordinance. But aren't, for instance, didn't we just have an election in Minneapolis, a charter city that set the filing fee? So this doesn't upend that, is that correct?
And Madam Chair, Senator Carlson, no, it does not. Charter cities already are allowed to set the filing fees where they wish, and so that wouldn't affect Minneapolis at all.
Madam Chair, to set where they wish and how they wish also, because theirs was a referendum, and this would not eliminate that referendum requirement.
Madam Chair and Senator Carlson, that is correct.
Yes. Okay, thank you.
Great. Senator Eakin renews his motion that Senate File 887 as amended be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Rules and Administration. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails and the bill is recommended to pass.
Thank you,
Madam Chair. Senator Eakin. Senator Pappas, welcome to the Subcommittee on Elections. I don't know if I've seen you before, our subcommittee before.
I don't think so, Madam Chair. I think I have some people who are going to join me. Madam Chair, this legislation, Senate File 675, is very similar to a bill that I passed 20 years ago from this body that was vetoed by then-Governor Arne Carlson. And it really is a process by which locally, a county could decide that their row officers, their auditor, treasurer, and recorder could become appointed positions. It's supported by both the Association of Minnesota Counties and the Minnesota Association of County Officers. We have broad bipartisan metro-rural support in both the House and the Senate. So it doesn't mandate that the county makes this change. It simply allows for an orderly process if they choose to do it. They have to have a public hearing. The board must approve the change with a supermajority and 80% vote. And even after that, the public can still petition the county in a reverse referendum to defeat the budget resolution. But it does allow, if counties say, really, we want to have a professional recorder that has the qualifications to serve the county. And you can't always even find people who want to run for election that have those qualifications. They could choose to do that. Obviously, it does not affect the county attorney or the county sheriff. Those are still elected positions.
Or the county board.
Or the county board members, right. So the people with me can introduce themselves. And
Mr. Schrieffels, we have first. Welcome to the committee. If you could please state your name for the record first and then proceed with your testimony.
Sure. Randy Schrieffels, I'm the Stearns County Auditor-Treasurer. I guess I don't have a lot of testimony. It does just provide a process for public input, and it does bring it to a local issue rather than a issue that's dealt with down here.
Thank you. And Mr. Masselt?
Esselt, yes, thank
Esselt,
you.
Esselt, welcome to the committee.
I wish it was Irish. It would be easier to pronounce. But thank you very much. My name is Bruce Esselt, and I have the distinct pleasure of serving as the administrator of Chisago County. But I'm here today representing the Association of Minnesota Counties and not the county board, per se. I think to highlight, first of all, thanks to Senator Pappas for the great leadership she's provided for now some 20 years on this bill, but also to the fact that this represents perhaps the first time you have the Association of Minnesota Counties and MACO here at the same table, and that's because under the leadership of Senator Pappas and direction, they said, let's figure out something that works for everybody and not bring a divided solution or issue to the committee. What I would like to highlight is just a couple of reasons why we think this is really an important piece of legislation. First and foremost is that if you look historically at what really happens, most counties don't actually use the current authorized statewide authority. Instead, what they do is they come to the legislature and they ask for specific approval, and you've done that for some 32 counties over multiple years, including Chisago County. We were here to get approval to appoint the recorder some 12 years ago. That's true for one simple reason. It's not because these transitions are controversial. In fact, if there is controversy, the county board wouldn't be able to pass these types of things. There has to be unanimous agreement that this is important. Rather, it's that citizens' knowledge and interest in these positions tends to be quite limited. These are seen as personnel decisions more and more internal to the county, and therefore already part of the purview of the county board. And, of course, then you have to look at the dauntingness of running a countywide election, especially when most of these positions are considered technical and, again, without controversy, don't really reach a lot of attention. The second, though, is that when there are changes that occur from appointed or from elected to appointed, it's often following a crisis in the office or a crisis in the county. That's not a good time to make those changes. What really we're looking for is that local decision-making for the county board when it's appropriate to make the right decisions for their organizations. And then finally, what has happened is the current legislation then results in a patchwork of winners and losers. Each county is dependent upon whether or not the state legislature will approve them when they seek the authorization to do it minus voter referendum. You have organizations that have been pitted against each other for issues that really are not germane to the day-to-day operations. And more importantly is we don't have an orderly fashion, therefore, in the state statutes to allow these transitions to occur. The legislation in front of you actually solves those things. First of all, it does establish that orderly transition for both the currently elected county officials and the appointed officials, as well as working with the county board. But that's only if they agree to make the transition. If they don't, they're still elected positions. Second is it ensures voter involvement and citizen involvement, ultimately enhancing the democratic process because it uses the same mechanisms of public hearings, supermajority approval, and reverse referendum, which is found in the currently approved county-specific legislation. In addition, as Senator Pappas said, it also has a 10% super referendum. In other words, if 10% of the voters say we don't want to do it, it automatically is eliminated. Now, the opportunity for the county board then is to go ahead and put it on the next election as well. Finally, we would argue this presents a very fair and balanced approach for Minnesota counties to follow, but again, only when they choose to. They have to consider whether or not to seek the transition from elected to appointed. Then they have to work with the elected official who's in that position to see if it's a good time to discuss that transition. Then they have to decide whether they should put it on the ballot, a referendum, or to make the action by resolution. And finally, they have to wait till the voters have had their say through public hearings, supermajority votes, and then an optional reverse referendum. Our position at the AMC is that when given the authority to make these important, tough decisions, county commissions almost always make good choices and wise choices. Affording these types of local partners and good governments with this additional tool, if they choose to use it, only seems to make sense at this time. After all, I can't remember the last time I voted for a county coroner, but we used to do that back in the 70s. So therefore, we are very much in support of this legislation. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Senator Pappas, I see on lines 4.25 to 4.29, if there is a currently elected position, that incumbent will serve the remainder of his or her term. In other words, this legislation would not allow a process to move forward where a currently elected county auditor, for example, could be changed over to an appointed position in the midst of a term of an elected official.
No, only if there was a vacancy or if there was a signed contract between the board and the incumbent. So the board could decide we want to convert this to an appointed position, but we like the person who is serving there now. We'll just make him or her a paid employee of the board instead of an elected official. So that is a process they also could decide upon.
But, Senator Pappas, wouldn't that elected official have to complete the term of their office and then move to an appointed position?
Yes.
I think that's an important
yes.
distinction.
Yes,
to
so
make.
They could be contemplating whether they're going to run again, and instead they develop a contract with the county to maintain their position and their salary, whatever, their benefits, but to continue on as a paid employee instead of an elected official. But you're right, at the end of their term.
Is there any discussion? Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify on Senate File 675? Seeing none, then Senator Hayden moves that Senate File 675 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Rules and Administration. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? the motion prevails. The bill is recommended
to pass.
Thank you
for that robust eyes. bring that to the floor.
She's teaching us well. I want to hear that again. We're on the floor. Mm.
Thank you, Senator Pappas. And okay. Now I realize we didn't. Senator Hayden would also like to move the minutes from our last meeting, which are in members' packets, be adopted. The March 12th minutes. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The minutes are approved. And there being no further committee work at this time, the subcommittee is adjourned.